It's Wednesday, the 29th of March, and you're listening to the Red Army Roundup. I'm your host, Paul Hinton, and as ever, I'm joined by Sean Phillips and Aaron Wren. Hello there, gents.
Hello there, Paul.
Good evening, Paul.
And this week we're going to have a very quick look back at the Devils' home weekend against the Belfast Giants, with another trophy being lifted. As usual, select our player of the week before looking at some news around the league and out of awards night. And then we're going to look ahead at the playoff quarterfinals. So we're looking at all the ties that are coming up, and obviously with a focus on Devils versus Storm, the one that we care about. So Saturday night, Giants came in to Cardiff for what could have been one of those stressful weekends as a Devils fan, had everything gone a little bit later. But as it happened, there was very little on the line, with Devils just needing a point to secure the conference. And that point came on Saturday with a win, a 4-3 victory, with Sean Bentivoglio picking up a hat-trick and Matthew Myers getting the fourth for David Rutherford. Pulled them back with 2 minutes to go for the Giants to make it a bit of an interesting finish. It was quite an interesting game, probably more interesting than I'd imagined. Giants needed 2 points from the weekend to secure themselves second place in the league. They didn't get it, but they did the following night when the Devils rested a number of players, with Tom Moody getting the start in net on Sunday. And I think it was Joey Martin, Chris Culligan, Andrew Hotham, and I think another couple of players were rested. The game sheet has got everyone listed on it, so I can't tell for sure. And the Giants ran out 5-3 victors, with the last goal coming 10 seconds from the end, with James Demaray putting the puck into the empty net. So a good weekend for the Devils, another weekend with a trophy. Telling, Sean, that even with a number of players rested and our starting netminder not playing, Belfast only beat us by a goal if you take out the empty net with 10 seconds left. While it wasn't at full pace, that's got to be slightly concerning for them, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it shows we've got real strength and depth. You're missing out on Andrew Hotham, who's probably your number one defenseman, and all round, he's had a career year. Like you said, you're missing your starter, Joey Martin. Some of your MVPs are missing right there, I got to be honest, I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to most of what happened during the games, but Saturday was a bit better than, it had something right, we needed a point for the conference, as you mentioned. Belfast needed 4 points from the weekend, and we did it nice and easily. Sean Bentivoglio pops up with a hat-trick, Matthew Myers gets the game-winning goal, and Sunday was absolutely mind-numbingly boring.
And what a great position to be in, to be mind-numbingly bored end of the season, because you've already won every trophy that's available to you at that time. We've had boring games as Devils fans in the past because there's nothing on it, because you're stuck in mid-table, can't go up or down. I'll take boring like that any day of the week.
Absolutely.
Aaron, quite a flat weekend. Another solid performance for Tom Moody in net, though.
I thought he played really well. I think that the issue was Sunday. We were missing a few players that could get us going, and I think that the rest of the team wasn't really bothered either. So, let the Giants win, make them feel good about themselves, and on to the next one, really.
Yeah, and the decision to play Ben Bams on Saturday, obviously been recovering from an injury. For you, the right decision to keep him fresh and also, help get that point that secured the conference?
I was a little bit disappointed the fact that we did play him, just because, you could kind of tell that he was still carrying the knock, and I want to prevent injury to him as much as we can before the big weekend coming up. But, we need... Obviously, the Devils were looking to take that the conference trophy. We did that, rested him the Sunday, and hopefully that's enough recovery time before the weekend coming up. So it's a swings and roundabouts kind of thing. At least he didn't play the full weekend, I suppose.
Yeah, just good to see Tom Moody still getting game time again, Sean. And if that injury did flare up, he's had quite a few games recently, because he went a long spell coming up to the end of the season without having any ice time at all. So, you know, he's definitely looking a lot fresher now than when he first stepped in.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason that we played Ben Bounds on Saturday, was that you look at Tom Murdy when he played that game in Sheffield and looked a bit shaky. He hadn't had a lot of ice time recently. Although they train as normal each and every week, it's very, very hard for a netminder to sort of get up to his A game. It takes a couple of games. That's why we have pre-season, because goalies are never at their best in the first game of the year, and I think they'll be the first to tell you that. And it takes a while to get back used to the real in-game situations and expecting shots from different places and of different abilities. And yeah, I think it was a perfect time to give Tom Murdy a game. If, as you mentioned, Ben Bounder's injury does flare up, hopefully it doesn't, and we get him for the whole of the remainder of the season. But listen, Tom Moody's more than capable of backstopping this team to some victories, as he showed earlier in the year when Bounds had an injury. And yeah, it's good to give him that game. And yeah, I thought he played very well.
And you're facing 35 shots as well, as you said, quite a game Giants wanted 2 points in. Devils had very nothing riding on it and a number of players out. So, you know, definitely a game that kept him busy. So
yeah, for sure.
Have him sharp. That was the weekend. As you had hardly anything on the game, so not going to run through in any sort of depth. Just time to choose our player of the week. And I think along with Sean, I paid very little attention on Sunday, given how boring the game was. So basing it mainly on Saturday, there's only one guy that can get the vote for me, and it's Sean Bedivoglio with his hat trick to secure the conference. Sean?
Yeah, snap. Sean Bedivoglio for me. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he's only our second player to score a hat-trick this year. Leighton Elmer being the first in Coventry and Sean Bedivoglio in this game.
Yeah, sounds about right. I probably had forgotten that Leighton Elmer had scored one, because I don't think I was at that game. So, Aaron?
Clean sweep. Yeah, I thought Bentley with his hat-trick was fantastic. And to be honest, waiting for him to score that third goal was probably the most exciting thing about the weekend. So, tells a story, really.
Yes, yeah, I was tempted to throw my new hat on the ice, but was worried it would not get to me, so.
I almost did, but then I had a row, so I stepped back down.
I'm told off.
Under the thumb.
I was.
Oh, dear. Well, Aaron got told off, and congratulations to Sean Bedivoglio, who nearly won Aaron's hat, but we'll have to make do with a hat trick and a conference trophy. But yeah, we hadn't said it up till now. That's 3 from 3. And, you know, Devils obviously going into the playoffs looking for the Grand Slam, and you'll be the first team to win all 4 trophies, including the conference. Whether or not that's the first team that wins a Grand Slam or not is another matter. Coventry definitely did, actually. Whether Nottingham did or not is a debate that we're not going to have. The following night on Monday was the Devils Awards night in Cottrell Park Golf Club, and Sean and myself attended. And it was an enjoyable night with fans and sponsors, players, everyone was there. I'm just going to run through the awards. We didn't do an awards show last year because I was sulking after the playoff weekend and refused to record a show. So we'll talk through the Devils Awards, you know, whether we had anyone else that we would have put forward, and whether there were any that we flat out disagree with. We may or may not do our own awards towards the end of the year, depending on my sulking. Seems to be the determining factor. So running through forward, and I'll go to you in turn. So starting with Sean, forward of the year, I went to a guy that we've sort of sung the praises of a fair bit in Joey Haddad. The right shout for you?
Yep, absolutely, 100%.
It wasn't a guy I voted for, but can't fault the decision. Fantastic player, and you've had an absolutely stellar season this year, so can't fault there at all.
Yeah, a real standout year for Joey Haddad, who's, you know, had 2 good years in Cardiff, but this year was a special one. Defenseman of the Year was an interesting one. I think Todd Cameron said there was something around like 600 votes cast by the fans, and Andrew Hotham and Mark Richardson ended up as dead heat. They then put it to a players vote, and there's 26 players and staff, and it was a dead heat again between the two of them. Andrew Hotham has obviously been the Devils Defenseman of the Year the last 2 years and the Elite League Defenseman of the Year. But for me, great to see Mark Richardson getting the recognition rather than being an unsung hero. He's actually being sung about this year. Aaron, the right call for you for it, for the two of them, or would you say that one stood out more than the other, if you were?
To be honest, I think the fact that the two defensemen that play on the same line and has been fantastic all year literally puts the nail in the coffin that both of them need to win it, because, you know, Hotham compliments Richardson, Richardson compliments Hotham. You know, Richardson put a lot more points up this year than what he usually does, and Hotham does his thing. I think if you split them up, maybe it might be a little bit different, but as a pairing, I think they both deserve the award, and I wouldn't be bothered if it went to either one, but the fact they went to both of them, well, happy with.
And Sean, I'm speaking to Todd Kelman after the event. He said that there were another two defensemen, I think, that were not far away from winning it as well. So it shows the strength that we've had in the defensive core this year.
Yeah, definitely. I was particularly pleased to see Mark Richardson get recognised for it, because Andrew Hotham puts all the points up and has all the accolades, but Hotham said it himself perfectly. He said that without Richie, this team wouldn't be anywhere near where it is, and that he's as good as he is thanks to Richardson. And they're almost symbiotic, that, like Aaron said, they complement each other. I think myself that Richardson has been excellent, as he has been when he's played with Hotham, and it's been a 3-year pairing, and they are single-handedly the best defensive pairing in the league, I think. I think you'd struggle to find many people who disagree with you based on the fact of how complementary they are towards each other, and they're a nice blend of style, and they're just a great pairing, and I'm glad that they both won it, because I think it's wrong to single out just one of them, and because they've just been tremendous for us this year and in years gone by.
And I agree with that, yeah. And as you said, being a parent for 3 years, and that shows. And it's going to be quite unusual in this league for the same, you know, two D men to play together, you know, nearly all of the time for that length of time.
Mm. And this year they played on the power play with each other, whereas the last couple of years,
you've hot shotted a forward into the first line along.
You've slotted a forward in there, or you've added someone like Fournier or Hudson into it, who were more offensively minded. And this year, Richardson's power play game has really come on. Yeah, awesome.
And power play and 5-on-5, there's been a lot of goals this season where one of them's gone across the ice to the other one and they've buried it. So, you know, that relationship just sort of really coming through even offensively now, whereas previously you'd probably say it was the defensive cover that was the main thing. So, yeah, 100%. Almost surprising in that it's great to see that many fans recognising that Mark Richardson contributes just as much as Andrew Hotham. And
yeah,
because as you said, Sean, from looking at game sheets, from just looking at what you see, Hotham's the guy with all the glitz and glamour. So good to see that recognition. Fan favourite, always a funny one. I suppose people will vote all sorts of reasons for this, but as it happens, having a wave will sort it out, and Ben Bounds picks it up. Sean, for you, the fan favourite.
Not for myself. Obviously, I can understand where that sort of comes from. Like you said, he's got his own wave, and fans love Bouncy, and so they should. He's an exceptional player, and he's going to be where we build this team from, hopefully for the rest of his career. And from what I've heard people say all throughout the year, my vote went to Joey Haddad, mainly because of that gritty game. He's a proper Cardiff Devil, and he's been exceptional every game, and he's not put anything less than 100% in, shift out. So that was my personal vote, but I can completely understand why Bounds won that award, and congratulations to him.
Aaron?
I thought that's who I voted for, so obviously I can see why he was picked. I'm always right, so... But when I think of a fan favourite, I think about the the player that everyone loves, you know, the guy who everyone has on the back of their shirt and things like that. So for me, it was between Mr. Ben Bounds and Patrick Bordelow, but Ben Bounds had it a little bit more for me because that's the name I heard most about the rink. So, and I do think he is a fan favourite, you know, he's a Brit guy and he is that kind of player that, likeable, you know, he backstops the Cardiff Devils to a league championship. Why wouldn't you like him?
it's a hell of a reason to like a player, isn't it? I agree with that. Now, the next one was a surprise to me, not because I don't think he's worthy of an award, but Unsung Hero went to Mark Lewis, which, you know, he's someone that we've spoken about a lot of times on the podcast as having great weekends. He's been our player of the week on at least a couple of occasions. And sort of in the group of people that I talk to about hockey, he's always been someone who's got a lot of praise. So I was surprised to get it, but great to see he's got he's been recognised in some way. For me, I think I would probably say Scott Hotham was more of an unsung hero in that I think he does, you know, as good, a different job, but a, you know, equally good job as Mark Lewis. But he probably gets mentioned even less. So, you know, it's funny. It's, you need to be sung a bit to become an unsung hero for people to think of you, because so the other person you could probably pop into your head would be David Bryan, someone who probably never gets mentioned at all. Sean, your thoughts on that one?
I think Lewis has had plenty of recognition. I think everyone loves his all-round game. He can fight, he can hit. He's played forward on a number of occasions where he's played on the wing. You look at some of the big goals he scored this year in the Challenge Cup particularly. Obviously, you look at that wonder goal that he scored in Belfast in the Challenge Cup semi-final, and then to get in front of net for the game-tying goal in the Challenge Cup final were both massive moments and extremely key to us going on to take that title. And for myself, I think Lewis has had lots of praise. And myself, personally, I voted for Matthew Myers because the guy's been an absolute bull for us all year, playing on a line that just grinds and grinds and grinds, and he just does so much for you, wins face-offs, draws penalties, and he just plays a great, great game, wins all his battles in the corners, and for me, you'd have been my unsung hero.
And Aaron, who got your shout in that one?
Can't really remember, but...
okay, who would you give it to now? Never mind who you vote.
Who would I give it to? I agree with Sean. Matt Myers for me, you know, on the PK, he had a shift on the power play. You know, grinds like an absolute dog on the ice. You know, chases everything down, hits everything. I just thought this year he's been phenomenal, and the fact that it only took me till the other day to think of him to be my unsung hero of the season proves that he was a worthy candidate. But I can't say I disagree with Mark Lewis being the unsung hero. I thought he's had a stellar season this year. Like Sean said, put up some key goals for us and an absolute solid defenseman and did everything right. And he's a worthy candidate of an award, whether it's the unsung hero or not. He's definitely one of the stand-up players for me this season. So
I will say that I think that the reason that Matt Myers probably didn't get many awards is because a lot of people have talked about him this year, mainly because he loses his helmet in every single game. So you can understand where people sort of think of him as being spoken about quite often.
They remember it. Moving on through the awards, there's not a lot of debate around the next one, which was the leading scorer, Jody Martin, for his third year in a row as a Devil, was the leading goal scorer. The Anthony Hart Memorial Award went to Charlotte Harris, the junior Devil and Team GB player who featured on BBC News. I don't think we're going to disagree with any junior that wins it. So congratulations to Charlotte. It was great to see Richard Murray, the club photographer, program printer and editor, getting a special service to club award, for his, you know, for all the work he's done over the years as he's retiring this off season. So won't be printing programs or anything again. But we've got a real award next. So just running through the list. The Red Army Travel Play of the Year Award, one where people could actually vote. Voted for by travellers on coming back from away trips. They vote for the Player of the Year, a Player of the Game, and then they get tallied up and we get a Player of the Year, which this year was Joey Haddad. And for me, that was, I think he probably had my vote more than anyone on the trips. But for me, it was just shows he's been great since pretty much since game one. And he's a perfect road player, Aaron, with his gritty style, battling the corners and you know, has chipped him some really important goals this season as well.
Yeah, definitely, Paul. He's the type of guy that, you hate to play against, you know. He's a little bit cheeky, keeps his elbows up high when he goes in for hits. You know, he really gets into your skin, and I think the fact that he does that in away rinks as well as home rinks, you know, it causes the opposition team to make mistakes, and that's where he's best, really. You know, he turns that puck over, protects it so well. Just an absolutely fantastic player, and like we've already said, it has literally been an absolute outstanding season from that guy this year, and I hope we keep him for next year, and hopefully maybe something else as well.
Yeah, hope to see him with us for a long time. Obviously, Joey Haddad's second award of the night as well. So a good night for Joey Haddad. Anything to add on that, Sean? Or?
No, can't argue. Like you said, perfect role player. I think he's been probably our best player. He's done everything. He's hit hard. He's just plays his heart out every game in, game out, and Devils fans appreciate that. And he's put some good points up. Like you said in an earlier show this year, he is going to score one of those toe drags eventually. And yeah, he's been exemplary for us this year. And any player who watches the Cardiff Devils and wants to play for the Cardiff Devils looks at a guy like Joey Haddad and they see exactly what they need to do.
Yeah, 100%. Next couple of awards, and probably not ones that we'd be able to disagree with, and for personal reasons only, not because of the decision, I was very disappointed with the Coaches Player of the Year Award because I am now expecting smug mode to be activated on Aaron. Andrew Lord's Coaches Player of the Year, Lane Ulmer. Lord, in his speech announcing it, did actually sort of call out people, you know, those of us who said how he wasn't performing up till Christmas, and, you know, those people who said he's got to go, he's got to be gassed, said that he was signed because he's a winner, because he's someone who will, you know, calm a dressing room down if things are not going well and just say, we've got this, and go out there and score some big goals. Aaron, I know you agree, but do you want to talk about that?
I've been saying it all year, you know. My birthday's early on in the year, early on in the season, and usually I always pick my... I usually get a puck sponsor for my birthday, so I usually pick my favourite player. Guess who it was? Lane Ulmer. No surprise. But I genuinely think, you know, his points has been consistent all year. I think he's been quite especially good since Christmas, but even before that, I didn't think he was as bad as people were saying. And as people have said, and like Lordo and other people I've spoken to, he's a winner. And that's one thing we probably did lack over the last 2 years. We found it in Lane Ulmer, so and he did score the game winner in a Challenge Cup final. So I just think he's a fantastic player, and for me, he was my forward of the year, just due to I want to give it to Joey Dad because I explained it to Paul off a couple of days ago, but I just picked Lane Ulmer. I ain't gonna go into that; it's too long. But, obviously I agree with Lord. He's my favourite player, and I agree with anything that Lord says. So, but, yeah, why not?
way to sell yourself as an expert that you agree with everything that the head coach says.
Except on just, you know, opinions around performances in Fife.
Let's bring that up again, shall we? Yeah.
Let's leave it there.
You've gone smug mode for too long, so needed to mention you calling the team out, which put you back down. Sean, for you as well, the right call. Obviously, the Coaches Player of the Year has to be the right call, but, you know, he's done what he's brought in to do the second half of the season, especially.
great to see him recognised. And you can understand why he's the coach's player of the year, to be quite honest with you. He's one of the veteran leaders. He put Andrew Law made an immediate decision on that based on the fact he gave him an assistant captaincy role. And, yeah, I was one of those people before Christmas that when we were talking about a fresh set of legs and changing someone up, Lane Elmer was top of my list to go.
You were wrong.
I couldn't have been more wrong, and will happily hold my hands up and say it because the guy's been immense. I think he just took a little while to settle. He's found his scoring touch. He just makes. I think it was just getting that chemistry right. And you look at who he's been playing with. Elmer, it was with Asselin, and I think it was Haddad and Joey Haddad, and Lane Elmer mentioned that it was almost effortless because they just complemented each other so well. And Elmer was relied upon by the head coach to sort of be a positive influence and be someone for the younger guys to look up to. And he's a gamer, he's a winner, and ultimately you look at the game winning goal in the Challenge Cup final. He's had a great, great finish to the year. And listen, if Lane Elmer had been playing that way since the start of August, we'd have won the league title in mid-January. But I don't care. We did it, and Lane Elmer was a massive part of that, and can't disagree with what the coach says, and that's why we're not head coaches of the Cardiff Devils.
Yeah, that's the only reason. If we only could have judged Lane Elmer, we'd have passed all the qualifications we wanted. The next one was the players' player of the year. Obviously, the one that you'd imagine means most to the team. Presented by Joey Haddad, who gave it to Chris Culligan. You're mentioning the fact that he's played probably every position in the team apart from in net, switching between defence and forward in the same game. You're going from left wing to right wing to centre, penalty killing. He's had power play shifts as well this season. Sean, a guy that literally does whatever is needed from him for the team.
Yeah, and he's just done everything so well. Like we said, he's not only played from game to game in different positions, he's gone from shift to shift when there's been a guy hurt, and the guy can just do it all. Like, he can score goals, he can skate well, I think he can string together some pretty plays, and he's so versatile that he's almost irreplaceable with regards to this team. And I couldn't have been happier to see someone like Chris Culligan recognised by, like you said, Paul, recognised by the people who voted for him that mean the most, and that's the people he plays with. And may have had a few spots with injuries this year and has bounced back, and you look at the decision made when he maybe was a little bit, he took a bit of a knock, and Andrew Lord elected to play him in the Challenge Cup final in place of Guillaume Doucet, and it was the right call. Chris Culligan's done everything that's been asked of him this year, and he's had a great year in my mind, and like I said, fantastic to see him recognised for it.
In agreement, Aaron?
Not a lot much more I can say than that, to be honest. Sean hit the nail on the head. Fantastic guy, and he does everything that he's asked to do, and if that doesn't deserve player of the year, players player of the year, I don't really know what does. So well done, Chris Culligan.
Excellent. And finally, on to the MVP. And for the third year in a row, it was Joey Martin. So one of those where I'd had a conversation a couple of times that surely your MVP should be either the forward or the defenseman of the year, just due to the fact that if you're the MVP, you should be the best in your position. But I think it just shows, the importance of Joey Martin hasn't been underestimated, even though he's obviously led the points scoring, but he's not been our runaway points leader this year. We've had that depth, but that hasn't diminished what he's brought to the team, Aaron, and how important he is to the Devils and just how good he is in this league.
Yeah, he is absolutely fantastic player. There's not many players in this league that come here, rip the league up one year in his rookie season in the league, turns up next season, does exactly the same thing but better. And in his third season, he might have seen a little bit less ice time due to you know, the quality and depth we've got in this team, but he still whips the league up. And, you know, he's such a good player. He does pretty much everything right. There's not a lot you can say bad about him. You know, if he goes unnoticed in the game, that just means he didn't do anything wrong. But usually he's doing something right and assisting on goals, scoring pretty goals, scoring key goals. He's just done it all this year. And I don't think there's more more of a fit-in player than probably, you know, Joey Dadd's had a stellar season. But Joey Martin's been absolutely fantastic. And there's not a lot more I can say, to be honest. I don't disagree with Alan. Alan is spot on. And just give him a contract for 10 years.
Oh, yes, please. And Sean, you know, not just that. He's probably the forward that logs the most minutes on special teams, power play and penalty kill, showing just how important he is, you know, whatever situation on the ice.
Yeah, he is. I think he's genuinely just so clutch for us. And he, whenever you need something going your way, you put Joey Martin on the ice. And he makes things happen. Even though the league have watched him play for this is obviously, like you said, his third full year. And he's still so, so good and finds new ways to just tear teams apart. And his on-ice IQ is through the roof. And he just works so hard, back checks like heck. And I really don't think that if Joey Martin hadn't played in, I think he played in nearly every game this year, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's a massive, massive reason that we did as well as we did. And the last 2 years, he's probably carried the team, and this year he hasn't had to do that. And so you may not have noticed him as much, but you take Joey Martin away and not just your goals dip off, but your penalty kill gets worse. Your power play isn't as strong. You don't score penalty shots. And he's just been amazing for us. And can't say enough good things about Joey Martin. And like Aaron said, I hope he stays here for a long, long time.
Yeah, yeah. Get him whatever number years he wants putting on his contract. Give him that and a couple more, because, yeah, just so clutch for us. And they were the awards. You know, as I said at the opening, really good, enjoyable night, and great to see, you know, sort of the players who had such good seasons being recognised. Awards done. So, just having a little look around the league, what a really smooth segue from piece to piece there for me. a surprising bit of news, but I wasn't in the slightest bit surprised that it happened in the Elite League. Manchester were playing Nottingham in Manchester on Sunday, and after the second period, they decided the ice was too wet and thought, well, we don't need to have a third period, we'll just have a shootout instead. Funnily enough, Nottingham and Manchester already knew the results from Sheffield, where Coventry had lost, meaning that Manchester had qualified for the playoffs, even if they'd lost in regulation. Sean, just, it seems like such a bush league move, but, you know, it's not surprising for this league, is it, unfortunately?
Just so elite league. Yeah, over the course of every year, so I think we get to the point where fans get so bored in the off season that you do get on Twitter, you get hashtag EIHL problems, and this is just like so, so elite league. Like, yeah, you're right in the sense that it didn't really have a major impact on the result at the end of the game. But if it didn't have an impact, then you should have made Manchester forfeit. And the outcome's still the same, and it's the correct thing to do, and does not make you look completely bush league. So I just don't see where the benefit came from for either team to do it like that. And
you imagine the benefit is 20 minutes less in the legs, you know, a deflected puck, not injuring
well,
a player.
You say that, but then Nottingham played two less games every year than everybody else because there's a bush league and they don't play all the Challenge Cup group games that they should. So I think that they should be made to play an extra game on top of it on poor ice to tire them out even more.
That sounds fair. But yeah, my point being that, you know, Devils and Giants should have agreed to a shootout at the start of our game because it meant so little. Or
yeah.
Just give Belfast 2 points because they needed it. It didn't make a difference to us, and we could have all avoided any injuries or tired legs, but you know,
well, that's why we put our backup in. That's why you put our backup in and rested four major players, isn't it? So,
but we still managed to play 60 minutes.
Yeah, we just didn't want Sheffield to finish second. So,
well, yeah, no, nobody wants Sheffield to finish anywhere. Aaron, your thoughts on it? Do you not see a problem with it, or?
Well, from a fan perspective, more than anything, I feel like I got cheated out of 20 minutes worth of hockey, to be honest, because, you know, you pay a certain premium to watch a game and you're only watching 2/3 of it. So that's one thing when I first heard about it, that's one thing I was disappointed about. It's like, you know, all right, fair enough, Manchester made a playoff, so they got one more home game to play. But up until that game, that was potentially the last game that Manchester Storm was going to play this season. And it was the last chance for some of the Storm fans to see the majority of that roster play for their team one more time, and they got cheated out of 20 minutes of premium hockey time, which, you know, if it happened in our rink, I wouldn't be happy about that. I'd probably ask for 2/3 of a refund or something. That's being a little bit petty, but
no, yeah. I think I would have quite happily foregone the last 20 minutes of Sunday's game. I know what you mean, and I think if you've got new fans in, especially, which, you know, end of the season always seems to be a time that draws fans in. You know, there's stuff on the line. It doesn't look great for them either. You know, missing out. I think you're especially on that side is, you know, your first or second game, and you're thinking, hang on, they're taking 20 minutes of hockey off me. So I definitely see where you're coming from with that. But the upshot and sort of, well, the news that already said was that Coventry lost to Sheffield on Sunday night, resulted in finishing ninth. And Sean, you're the stats guy. I think first time they've missed the Elite League playoffs.
I believe it is.
You know, obviously the first time Dells missed the Elite League playoffs, you know, we've not had a bad 3 years since then. You know, Coventry was a club, I mean, nowhere near the situation that Cardiff were 3 years ago. They've had record crowd attendances. Their social media work, their web work has been really good. You know, the output has been some really high quality stuff, and it's shown we're getting the crowds through the doors. And you would imagine that should have been or should be reflected in probably next year's budget. But where has it gone wrong, Sean? What's been? It's just crazy. Because there are some good players there, but do you think it was a recruitment issue?
Yeah, I just don't think Coventry have an identity in that team. I don't think they know what they set out to do. Like, you look at I think the best players that they've brought in have been the players which came in the middle of the season, and that's Sainer and Almeida were two great players. And I just don't understand what they set out to do this year. They signed a team with a bit of size. They looked like they were going to be a proper Danny Stewart team, and like, just where is it? Where's the fight? Where's the, you know, if you're going to go down, then go down fighting and go down throwing hits, throwing your weight around, just giving it 100%. And we've been to Coventry, I've been to Coventry every game this year, and I don't think I've once been truly worried about losing a game. I think there was one where it went to
3-1 down, I think, at one stage.
I think it was the game that we went to overtime.
Yeah, 3-1 down and got it back. And there was also
I think that was
the home half one where there were a lot of
players. Was that a Challenge Cup game from memory?
I think it was. And there was also the Hogarth, Joey Martin checking to the head.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But ultimately, I don't think that there's been many occasions this year. Coventry have beaten us twice at home this year, which is no mean feat. They're one of very few teams to do it. And But I don't know. I think they've underutilised players. I don't think that Klotz has had enough ice time when he's been, you know, he's not the greatest player in the league by any stretch, but he puts some points up and he works hard. And I just don't understand I think they place far too much stock in their netminder, who's been very volatile, lost his head on too many occasions. Teams have worked out how to beat him, and they haven't built a defence strong enough to sort of cover for his weaknesses. And their defence doesn't seem very mobile. And There's all sorts of things wrong with that team, but ultimately I think it's an identity problem, and if they keep hold of Danny Stewart in the summer, they're going to just need a major, major revamp. They, like you said, they've got some good players. I really like Robin Bergman. I really like Matt Marquardt. Kevin Noble is an absolute pain in the arse and a horrible player to play against, but I can appreciate why they love him so much in Coventry. And they've got some talent there, and it's just they don't seem to have that team mentality. I think there's a lot of individuals there, and it's going to take a major, major that roster and that organisation needs major surgery going into the next year, particularly with losing one of their talismans in Russ Cowley, who's retiring. So it's going to be a real difficult summer, and lots of work to be done up in Coventry.
Yeah, most definitely. And you mentioned Garrett Cloth's not had a lot of shifts, but he has thrown some big hits. He's a good fighter, for what that's worth, but if you need a lift. And I remember we had one game where Bordeleau was rested against them, and I don't think Klotz saw a shift until the third period, and I thought, oh, he's going to go out and try and run roughshod, but didn't. That side of the identity. But another gamble they took in the off-season was signing Liam Stewart, Aaron. Obviously, GB qualified, but counts as an import due to where he trained. And, I think most of the time we've seen him this year, for me, he's looked of a quality of a decent Brit. He's not a standout Brit by any level, but he's taken up an import spot on the roster. Is that, do you think that's a gamble that, or a move that hasn't paid off for them?
I don't know, because with Liam Stewart, I genuinely do think he was I wouldn't say a really good player, but I think he was one of the only players in that team that was playing to win games, but not if you know what I mean. Like, you could see
he wasn't playing.
He was going out every single shift and putting 110% in no matter what. And when he first was with them, when we first seen him in the first couple of years, he's only getting a few shifts on the fourth line. And throughout the year, he's getting moved up the line, playing penalty kill, a little bit of power play. I thought he was a really good player. I imagine him as a Brit player just for the fact that he is pretty much British. But the fact that he does take that import space up is a little bit. But, if they had a British netminder, maybe that could swing in their favour because they got that extra import. But, with Brian Stewart, they don't have that. So it is a gamble, but I do think he was their best player this year.
I'm going to challenge you on that, Paul, in one respect, because you talk about Liam Stewart like that and maybe he isn't worth an import slot, but then does he play that much of a different game? And I think he's produced more than... Admittedly, we've gone four lines, but we've said on multiple occasions that David Bryan could play on our third line. And is he that much of a subpar player compared to David Bryan?
I think in terms of skill set, I think he probably is not that much of a subpar. And I don't know, we don't know contracts in the Elite League, but...
Bearing in mind, he's 22 years old.
Oh, and as a prospect, that's fine. But... I've assumed that he's probably taking a very similar wage to what he would if he was a Brit. If he's on that level of Brit quality, they're obviously paid more because they're in shorter supply. If he's on third, fourth line import money, then he's a great signing. But I don't know why. I've just always assumed he's on more and he's taking up a bit of the budget. If I could be totally wrong in that. If you were running three lines, if next season there's been rumours, but if next season we were cut down to three lines, I don't think many people would be saying out if we were just going to keep everyone that Brian would be one of those guys you'd want as good as he has been. There probably are nine forwards above him.
But then you look at, if you're going for three lines, Brian is a really good role player and. He does.
Talking in terms, you makeup of teams and everything is different, but if you went down our list of imports and forwards, you could probably get to nine before you pick Brian, and I'm a really big Brian fan, so it's not a derogatory thing to say.
No, but what
I feel the same with Liam Stewart.
What I'm trying to say is, obviously this is going a little bit past thing, but with Brian, because he's a role player, instead of picking your nine best players, like Brian would take over some quality players that will play on the top six just for purely the fact that he's so good on the penalty kill and things like that, because he's a good role player. You know, when you build
100%, but for me, you've got Matt Myers, Chris Culligan, Joey Haddad are all good role players, and
yeah, but then you play them three on your third line, and then they're not getting the minutes to produce points, things like that.
Totally I know,
but I'm just trying to argue against you because I'm not very intelligent, so.
It shows. I get 100% what you're saying. And so I was just trying to make the point that Coventry aren't running four lines. And if you're running a four line and Liam Stewart's your input on that line, then great. But he's, as Aaron said, he's moved up the lines. And I don't think he's necessarily produced a lot more as he's gone up the lines. Whereas when we've moved Brian up the lines through the year, you've seen the point productions go up. And it's a really finger in the air thing, but I can think of at least two games at home to Coventry this season where Liam Stewart seems to be on the ice almost every time we scored, which it could just be a sign he's getting a lot of minutes, but you know, if that's a pattern, then it's not a good thing. But and just to really, really point out, I don't think Liam Stewart comes in the top five problems in Coventry. So it was just a talking point around size
in the top 23, because the rest of the roster are problems before Liam Stewart is.
I would massively disagree with that, because Sina, Almeida, Matt Marquard, Kevin Noble all put a lot more into that team. You know, Robin Bergman, you know, probably Russ Cowley, probably Ashley Tate as well. This season, Ashley Tate, who is older than time itself, who's had a really good year, I've seen him. And Russ Cowley retiring, I think he's 33, a massive loss for Coventry and GB. Cowley always looks better when he plays for GB for some crazy reason. But, you know, Coventry have got to be worrying about losing Ashley Tate soon. There has to be a limit to how long he can go on for. But then Rod Saric, the pillar of the community in Sheffield, keeps coming back. That's an interesting one. But, you know, as Sean said, there will be a lot of changes, you'd think, in that team. But literally, I think Matt Marquard is probably the only player in the team that, if the Devils signed, I wouldn't be massively disappointed.
I would.
And I wouldn't be massively disappointed. He's not someone that I would in any way be going out to try and sign. But I think he's looked good whenever I've seen him.
Do you think that they'll replace Danny Stewart Paul, or?
It's one of those things. They've changed their coach so often that eventually you've got to stick, but you've got to have a coach that's shown something before you stick. So do you have another gamble? Personally, I think Coventry needs to go right out of the organisation. Chuck Webber came in and did do a decent job. Eventually, you won in the playoffs. Never really got it set in the league. But I think, you know, you've got James Pease on the bench, and you've got, you know, an old guy in Danny Stewart. They've had Mark Lefebvre. They've had Matt Soderstrom. I just think totally fresh eyes. James Pease, if he's running the club, fine. But get him off the bench. If you want an assistant coach, bring in a fresh pair of eyes. There's something wrong with the team, the club, and they've had three different rosters. That's coming from the top. They've had three different rosters and at least three different coaches. There is a deeper issue there. Yeah, from the outside, it's not easy to see what it is. So for me, I think I would give it a change, but if they don't, I wouldn't say it was a massive mistake, because eventually they do need to try and settle with someone and get a little bit of consistency going, because it's where coaches do better. You see in football, when they're given time, it usually reaps dividends. And you look at Andrew Lord, 3 years in, hasn't done the worst job in the world. That is more than enough talking about Coventry. we got two more shows to come in, to be fair. We won't be talking about them then, so. Let's look at the playoff quarterfinals. We'll quickly look at the other three that we're looking at. That are going to be played. And running down the seedings, the fifth place Brayhead Clan, the second seeds, get the nice task of playing seventh place, a team that finishes just two below them in the regular season, in the Dundee Stars, a team that caused us problems last year and you know, took a big fight back in Dundee on Sunday night for the Devils to get through. Aaron, Clan have really struggled against our conference, but you obviously were quite comfortable winners of the Gardner Conference and you know, famously celebrated it. Do you see Brayhead getting through, or is this you know, a too close to call tie in your eyes?
You know, like you said, Brayhead have run away with games in that conference this year, so I can't really see another team. I can't see another Scottish team beating them to knock them out. But saying that, it's playoffs. You know, Dundee beat us at home last year. You know, we did go up there and give him a good seeing too. But if Dundee can learn from that mistake, you know, same coach, if they can learn from that mistake, who knows? You know, we could be seeing Dundee in the Final Four, which I wouldn't mind. But it's going to be a game where I fancy Brayhead to win it, but with it being playoffs and playoffs being a whole new monster, it could be anyone's game.
Sean, you're Dundee with the second best team in the Gardner Conference for finishing 10 points behind Brayhead. Is that... We've definitely not seen Brayhead at their best, but, you know, that's you know, a sizable gap, you know, in terms of games played in their own conference, isn't it?
Yeah, but you look at the rosters top to bottom, and I think that the real battle in that is going to be in the netminders, and I really, really don't rate Bray as a netminder. I think he's a very, very lacklustre goaltender, and I think that Dundee's is... I think Dundee have a pretty good goalie, to be quite honest with you, and it's really, really difficult to say which way this one is going to go, and I think that Dundee have a good team. They maybe haven't had a great season, but they have the ability to just scalp games left, right, and centre off some teams, and they're going to really want to become good at playoffs. And with our playoff format, this is a trophy which Dundee can go and win. Dundee can go and win it. Fife can go and win it. Coventry, if they'd been relevant enough to qualify, they won it they won it a couple of years ago. So, yeah, it's going to be all hell for leather in Dundee, and they're going to want to go for it. And I wouldn't like to bet on this one, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair enough. I can see Brayhead edging it. You said about the netminders, but Brayhead have got that first line on fire with Becker, Pitt, and I think Hammond on it now, all running well over a point a game this season. So you just think if they click, whatever Brayhead's issues are, it hasn't been that first line. So I think if they get it together, then I think we'll see Brayhead in the final weekend. If not, we'd see Dundee, and you know, sort of interesting the way this, obviously, we're not getting massively ahead of ourselves, but if the Devils were to qualify, it would be Dundee if they made it through, but obviously Devils couldn't face Brayhead until the final, with us being first and second seeds.
I'd personally like to see Dundee qualify as well, given that we all said in last year's podcast that although we were delighted to qualify, we felt gutted for the Dundee fans.
We did feel gutted, and you know, after what happened on the Saturday, I'm bringing it up, I'm nearly over it, it's nearly a year. I just felt like Dundee would have done more justice in that game. It wouldn't have, obviously they wouldn't have played the same team, but Dundee would have just couldn't have done a worse job than we did on that Saturday, you know, Saturday afternoon. So I felt even more gutted for them watching that performance. Yeah, look at that. Three trophies, and I think I'm over it. That's all it took.
I think that's the reasonable point to sort of I think the club deserves some forgiveness from that.
Well, you know, it's 12 months, three trophies. So, you know, it's now I know where my limit is for getting over socks. Moving on. I feel like we should finish with this rather than the Devils game, because it is the biggest rivalry in Europe in the playoff quarterfinals. Sheffield Steelers against the Nottingham Panthers for the 15th and 16th time this season.
Oh.
And for, in the last 3 years, the 51st and 52nd time in three seasons.
Ouch.
I'm sure I read that. That sounds too wrong when I've said it, but
16, yeah, in 3 years. That's 20 right. games each.
Yeah, I think I read or I listened to the, a statistic the other day that for Nottingham, almost 20% of the games this year have been against the Steelers. So almost a fifth.
The rivalry seems has died a death in the fan base. You know, the clubs still hype it up. They're still massively supported in terms of attendances.
Sellouts.
There just seems to be a bit of apathy between the teams because it's, you know, the old saying from that old saying that I can't say.
Familiarity breeds contempt.
Breeds contempt. Thank you, Sean.
That's all right.
Well, it's deep in for a horse. but, you know, it is, you know, still a big title. It's two big teams. Third and fourth in the league, but the gulf between the top three and Nottingham in fourth has been massive. It's 15 points this season. And they've really domestically haven't been at the races, Aaron. Did you give them a hope? You know, obviously they're not a bad team. They've troubled us enough, but where do you see that tie going?
I can't see it going any other way than Sheffield, but Nottingham proved that last year. You know, they finished in a similar position in the league, and you know, when it comes down to the competitions that only take you a couple of games to win, such as the Challenge Cup and the playoffs last year, they won both. So I'm not going to count them out, but I said a couple of weeks ago that, you know, that Continental Cup win for Nottingham wouldn't do them any good for the rest of the year, and I kind of still stand by that. So I fancy Sheffield for the win, but I'm not going to count Nottingham out, but Sheffield is my pick for that game.
For me as well, I'd agree with that. I think whilst they finished third a point behind Belfast, Sheffield are the best team that I've seen this season, which is weird when you think our record against them in the league was 6-8, which an amazing record. It probably won't be done again for a long time. But they've always looked a good team, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see them turn Nottingham over. But Sean, your thoughts on it?
I agree with you both. I think Sheffield will take that one, and I think that's the way I'd like it to go as well, given that you mentioned it, Paul. We just cannot seem to beat Nottingham this year. They seem to just have our number, especially in the NIC. And
before they've won it against us, yeah, in the NIC. And, fancy them there again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you look at the Challenge Cup game, which they doubled up, if you added that as an extra game, they'd probably class it as yeah, exactly, yeah. So I think it'll also be good just to not have someone with home ice advantage. I think that's another reason that I'd like for Sheffield to do it, and I don't know.
Why not shouldn't be played with home ice advantage? It's just not fair.
Yeah, I know. I just can't believe it's even possible in this league. But on another note, don't rule Nottingham out. Like Aaron said, this is a competition where they literally Nottingham need to salvage their season. They could go on out about being the champions of Europe all they like. They're not the champions of Europe by any stretch of the imagination. They won the Continental Cup. Kudos to them, the first British team to do it. But their fans are in a real, real tough place and are slowly falling out of love with that club. And they need to do something to get those fans back on board, and nothing would please that fan base more than to beat the Steelers, knock them out and go on and win the trophy. And yeah, don't ever count Nottingham out of this one. And if their best player, Mika Wheatman, stands on his head, and I think Jason Williams is back. I know they're missing Matt Carter for the remainder of the season, but if Jason Williams and Mika Wheatman can be at their best, then there's no reason why Nottingham can't cause the Steelers some problems and be involved in the finals weekend.
Indeed. And the last tie, second in the league, placed sixth, with Belfast facing off against Fife, who've picked up the scalps of the top three this season, have beat ourselves, Belfast and Sheffield, and they've also beaten Nottingham at home. So the top four in the league have all, you know, fallen foul to Fife, and I think Fife have performed as well cross-conference as they have in conference in terms of points per game, which is surprising when you look at, obviously, the relative strength of the teams and the fact the top four are in the Erhard conference. Sean, a banana skin tie, but one that, you know, you think Belfast would be confident in overcoming over 120 minutes.
Yeah, first of all, I just want to congratulate you on your alliteration there. I think falling foul to Fife is up there with one of my favourite expressions in a long time. So congratulations on that. I think if there is going to be a shock, then that is the place where it's more likely to come from. I think Belfast will do it. I think Belfast are a great side. They have a good goalie. They have scoring in abundance. And they're just an all-round great team. But Fife, if they can be at their best, and we talked this year about Fife and Brendan Brooks, Rick Jackman, Russ Moyer, they've got a great core of players. And they're going to want to be involved in the finals weekend again. You know, they were involved last year. They played Nottingham, did they not? And
yes.
run them pretty close. And yeah, it's that's going to be a real tough one. Like you said, Fife have scalped some great results from the top teams this year, and that's going to be a tough old series for Belfast, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and speaking of tough series, Devils face Manchester, a team it took us to overtime once in Manchester. They've beaten us in the Challenge Cup in Manchester and beaten us on home ice this year. But first playing eight for the first time ever in the Elite League. The eighth place team overcame the champions last year when Coventry knocked out Sheffield Steelers. Can history repeat itself, Aaron?
Pressure. I don't want to say, I just got a small sneaky feeling that Manchester.
Oh, goodness me. If you're going to have a creeping feeling about it, at least have it be about the right team, please, Aaron.
Sorry. But yeah, I got a sneaky feeling that Manchester could do us over, you know. I think the fact that we've got our first game at home is a little bit of a help. You know, if we can get a good lead going into the rink, I think we'd be okay. But I think where we're going to struggle is the rink itself. You know, I know we've got a couple of guys who played there before, but we've struggled to get going there the last couple of years, and it's just they seem to play really well on that ice, and I think if they can keep it within a goal or two, they're going to be well up for it, and I think they'll think that they can do it, and you know, it's all to play for then. And you know, I don't want to see us to go out and have another playoff weekend in Nottingham without us being there, but I got a sneaky feeling they can do it. You know, it's playoffs, it's a different animal. You know, Coventry proved it can be done when finishing eighth and winning winning the tournament, so it's not impossible. It's been done. Manchester look at fact like that, and they've got quality players, and I think this is the first time in a while that their roster's full strength, because I think I'm probably wrong, but I'm not sure. Like, one of their best players, Matt Bissonnette, missed our last game against them, so you know, it's a difficult one. Full roster, two games where anything can happen. It's going to be a great exhibition for fans, but I'm not confident at all. But saying that, I haven't been confident about the Challenge Cup or the league, and we won both. So,
well, that's worked out all right for us so far. Sean, as Aaron said, sort of struggled to get going there this year, but Yeah, I think in the end, the last couple of games in Manchester, the Devils have won, if not relatively comfortably in the end, you could probably say.
Yeah, Manchester are a tough team to visit. You know, you look at how tough we used to be when teams used to come and try and play in the BVT and how difficult it was. And we scalped some results from some good teams in the playoffs over the years. You look at our record of making the playoff finals every year since its inception, and we scalped some real, real teams in the BBT. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And there's no reason that Manchester can't do it to us. We need to take them seriously. We need to be at our best. And Manchester have some dangerous, dangerous players. You look at a guy like Aaron said, Matt Bissonnette's been excellent. Darren Dzinski, in my mind, made my Elite League team of the year. I think he's been an outstanding player for them. And it's not going to be easy. There's no doubt about it. But we bring our A game. We go a couple of goals up. And I think if we take a two-goal lead up to Manchester, then we'll be all right, because we just have so much character in this team. And it's full of winners, like we mentioned with Lane Ulmer earlier on in the show, and Scott Hotham. All guys like that are going to come up big, and these guys have won everything on offer them this year, and they're going to really, really be gunning to make history. They're going to be, they'd be the first team to do it, and I don't think they're going to let a team like Manchester stand in their way.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, Sean. It's not an easy tie. It's in no way a foregone conclusion, but I didn't agree with playing the first leg on home ice, but I think given the type of rink the Manchester's is, it could play in our favour, in that hopefully as long as the first leg goes well at home. Obviously it didn't work out for us last year with Dundee. But if it goes well at home, it doesn't give Manchester that chance to just sit tight and try and catch the odd goal, which, you know, we did so well in the 10th when ties were tight or we were home first. You just play a horrible game and, you know, hopefully sneak a goal or two to take the lead in the second leg. But I'm taking that off them, and obviously they have got the double travel, which, you know, is 4 hours up the road, but they're going to be getting to bed 4 hours later than the Devils, having been sat on a bus after the game. So, you know, I think there are a number of factors, and, you know, it's first place 8. Devils, if they bring their A game, by the very nature of it, will win the games, because we've consistently proven that we are the best team in the league this year. And it's just a case of doing that. And, you know, I can't imagine attitude being a problem. I can't see us slacking off or thinking it's job done, because, as you said, Sean, there's winners right the way through the team.
Just one,
without a doubt.
Before we move on, Omar Pasha, his last team that he coached that made the playoff finals was Hull. They made the semi-final, and it was a controversial loss. So I think he's a big playoff coach, and I'm not expecting us to win. Put it that way, but I just thought I'd throw that in there because I looked it up. So
okay, just quickly,
7th as well. So
just quickly then, Aaron, your 4 teams that are making the finals weekend, go.
I don't want to say, because the team I want to
go on, get on with it, get on with it.
Fife, Steelers, Clan, and Storm.
Paul?
Oh, Aaron. Giants, Steelers, Stars, and Devils. And Sean?
Snap. Giants, Steelers, Stars, Devils was exactly my choices as well.
Selfishly, I'd be very happy with that. It'd mean Devils play the 7th place team in the league instead of Steelers or Panthers, which is what it would be if... Well, it'd be Panthers if they went through, or Steelers, or Giants if not, because of the crazy way the seedings work. Well, that's our show, and we're going to the playoff quarterfinals. we'll be on our penultimate show next week, guys. Where does the season go?
Only downhill. Listening. It only goes downhill.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope it doesn't go downhill. How many 14 Elite League playoffs? It's gone downhill for us at some stage. So it's got to change sometime. Got to change sometime. Thank you again to everyone for listening. Please keep sending us your thoughts. Let us know how you think the Devils games are going over the weekend. And we'll share them all on next week's show. So thank you again. But for now, that is your Red Army Rounder. Devil inside, the devil inside. Every single one of us.